Good morning. So for those who are short on time or need to be somewhere else, the answer to this question is yes. But it depends. And I think that's what makes this fairly simple analysis so interesting. I don't have any financial disclosures, unfortunately. One day I hope to have them. So I come to this work two different ways. The Georgia Health Policy Center has been working on ACA-related issues before there was an ACA, since 2009. And one of the things we've been trying to do is to give assistance, very practical assistance, to public health departments around the country about all the massive changes that are coming out of this 1,000 or 2,000 page law, depending on whether you double space it or not. The second was my work with the CDC recently. When I first came to the CDC, I was in the director's office in the Office of Health System Collaboration, and there was a prevailing sentiment in the office that we, the office, needed to help health departments around the country figure out how to get reimbursement for clinical services. Just do it, get out there, help them. That's the way the world is going. More and more people are going to have insurance, and health departments need to be a part of that game. And I thought that was an interesting position to take, because my mind immediately went to, is there even a market for these services? So I started digging a little deeper into the question, and I found this quote from the Institute of Medicine. As clinical care provision in a community no longer requires financing by public health departments, public health departments should work with other public and private providers to develop adequate and alternative capacity in a community's clinical care delivery. So there's really like two sides of this. There's the Institute of Medicine saying, you know, give up on clinical services. That's not your game anymore. Help others in the community do that. And then we had the CDC saying, you know, not only should you be providing these clinical services, but we need to really figure out how to get reimbursed for those services. So I thought it was a really interesting question. And the question is very complex. You know, there's the question number one, should you even be providing the services? Do you have the staff? Do you have the wherewithal? Do you have folks who even are going to seek those services from you within a system that has so many choices now? And if you make that decision, you know, should you seek reimbursement? It's very expensive to set up reimbursement systems. Do you really want to get into that game? The complexity involved in reimbursement is only going to get more and more complex with all the different models that are coming out. One that a lot of folks know about is accountable care organizations. And what about global payment? And how would public health departments get involved with those? So public health departments really needed to decide if it made sense to provide those services to begin with. You know, they might be already providing them, they might not be. Does it make sense, number one? And they really needed to take local context into that consideration. And then number two, does it even make sense to seek reimbursement? As I dug a little bit deeper, I saw that as of 2013, it was just a minority of local health departments that were actually providing services. But a different report cited that of those who did provide the services, the majority did bill some form of third-party payment. So before I came to the field of public health, I went to school, got a Master's of Business Administration and a Master's of Health Administration. So, you know, I had drilled into my brain the whole concept of supply and demand, and I went back to my CDC colleagues and I said, is this really at its root a supply and demand issue? And then I remembered that a professor of mine, when I was getting my MBA, said that anything worth explaining can be explained in a 2x2 table. So if you can get it down to just two variables, you know, at its basic core, then you really have some place to start. And so I came at this, you know, it's a very simple way to look at it with that sort of mindset. So I thought of demand in this way. You know, a lot of states were expanding Medicaid. That Medicaid expansion might increase demand for services because we know there's a relationship that when folks are insured, they seek services in greater numbers more often. So we had this stimulus to the market, Medicaid expansion. And then the supply side of that was whether or not a county was designated as a health professional shortage area. Now I know, you know, there's a little bit of controversy in how accurate those designations are, but they are the official designations that we have at the county level. So I thought, let's just start with those two things. Did a state expand Medicaid? And at the county level, since many or most counties have a health department, are they in a health professional shortage area? I just used three sources of data, county and population data from the U.S. Census Bureau, HPSA designations from HRSA's Bureau of Health Professions, and state Medicaid expansion designations from Kaiser Family Foundation. And this was as of July 2015, because as we know, states can continue to consider expansion opportunities within Medicaid. So here's the 2x2 matrix. And I'm going to pause on this just for a minute because there's a lot of information here. But if you look across the rows are the HPSA designation, and the columns are Medicaid expansion. And then we make some conclusions just based on that. So if there's no HPSA, then we assume there are adequate providers in that market. And if there's no Medicaid expansion, then we assume that there's no increase in demand for Medicaid members. And so if you put those two things together, that's sort of, I thought, a likely low safety net roll situation. If you go just to the right and you look at a situation where there's also no HPSA, but there is Medicaid expansion, the difference there is that that particular market and the role for safety net is really impacted by the presence of other providers. So in a lot of markets, Medicaid is actually something that providers compete for, particularly in rural areas. And it's sort of the lifeblood of many practices. So you can look at this in a lot of different ways. This work is actually about to be published in the American Journal of Public Health, and I've gone back and forth with the editors on what some of these pieces mean and how to interpret them. So you can interpret them in a lot of different ways. So what does it mean if you have no HPSA? How would you interpret that? What does it mean if you have Medicaid expansion? How would you interpret that? But the whole point of this is, can you just start thinking about this very practical situation with two variables? So I put all that data into the magic data machine, and this is what I got. So the thing that really impressed me, I guess, the overall thing, which was really not the intent of the analysis, was how many counties in our country are designated as health professional shortage areas. 90% of the counties are designated that way, which is really interesting to me. That doesn't mean that it's that much of the population, but it was a lot of counties. So then you say, okay, you have all this information, so what can you decide from that? So in that case where there might be no health professional shortage area, so assuming you have enough providers, and no Medicaid expansion, meaning there's no increased demand for those services, maybe there isn't such an opportunity for providing clinical services to begin with, and if that's the case, then perhaps there's a low opportunity for reimbursement. If you go down to the lower right-hand side, we have the situation where there are actually counties with health professional shortage areas, and Medicaid expansion. So now you have pent-up demand from all the folks who now have insurance, and you have not enough providers. So this might be an area where public health departments could really play a role in the safety net. So the recommendation there might be strongly consider providing clinical services, and there might actually be a good opportunity for reimbursement in that case because of Medicaid expansion. So some people like a picture. I have a hard time interpreting pictures, so bear with me. But some people like a picture better. So the orange on the screen is a health professional shortage area and expansion of Medicaid. And the red is a health professional shortage area with no expansion. And I just highlight those two because I come back to the point, look how many counties in our country are designated as health professional shortage areas. It really is striking. The green areas are not health professional shortage areas and they have expansion, and the yellow are not health professional shortage areas with no expansion. And so you're all from different places. I know you can't really see the exact boundaries of these counties, but think about where you are. And that's all I'm saying in this analysis. Start with these two factors when you, if you're in a health department, are faced with this decision. You'll also notice that some states are entirely health professional shortage areas, particularly in the Pacific Northwest. So conclusions, health departments in only about 7% of U.S. counties might be in a position to not offer clinical services as part of the safety net based on these two factors. And health departments in 39% of the counties may have a good opportunity to seek reimbursement. So if you reflect back on why I said I actually got into this question, it was the CDC saying, we really need to go out there and have all these health departments start getting ready for reimbursement. But if these two factors say something about that equation, then maybe only about 39% could make a real go at that reimbursement. And then 86% of the counties designated as HPSAs, yet few health departments provide clinical services in those counties. So there are lots of limitations. And the number one, and this was the big criticism by my colleagues at CDC, was it's only two factors. Exactly, it is only two factors. It doesn't account for those who may be newly eligible for Medicaid or not newly eligible for Medicaid, but still need services, regardless of a state's expansion status. And of course, once you look at those two factors, if you just visualize where your county sits, you then need to take into account a whole host of local context and conditions. So these two factors are not the be-all and end-all. However, it does serve to group health departments in broad categories as a first step, and I emphasize that, just as a first step through the decision-making process. So there you go. I'm happy to take any questions. I think we might have a little time. So before you ask your question, I think they're recording this and they asked me to repeat the questions. I just wanted to say, he said it was a great presentation.
Affordable Care Act, Medicare, Medicaid expansion. I'll advise people, Connecticut, which is an affiliate county, a health county structure. It's a bunch of health departments, like 60 of them. And I run one of the regional ones. Watch what goes on in Connecticut in the next 6 months. The governor has they signed up thousands of people in Connecticut on Medicaid expansion. Now 770,000 adult total, and 40% of the children in which state of Connecticut are not Medicaid on that. The governor cut $192 million 6 weeks ago to the hospitals. Across the board, sliced. Okay, Medicaid sliced the state of Connecticut. So it is on the interesting watch how this plays out. Do they raise the income tax to 10%, or do they continue to cut Medicaid? It's actually playing. playing out as we speak. We'll see how this goes. And my iPhone is full of things from Access Health CT, the ACA provider, and we're signing up people right now, sending people down, we're signing them up, and probably 78% of the people they sign up are in Medicaid, the other 20% are subsidized or non-subsidized. Clinical services, I'm a supporter of local health department clinical services. I think we have a commissioner of health today who's more in the Institute of Medicine camp, so I just like that quote. Very interesting how it plays out. Thank you.
So, short answer, keep your eye on Connecticut. All right, thank you very much.